This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob on Seattle Sports on 710. We are live in Peoria, Arizona, Mariners training facility. Mariners with a day off. The facility basically empty except for us out here braving the elements and the rain, the sleet, the cold. No, it's not that cold. And it looks like the rain might be letting up a bit. But a big day out here. We got a lot coming your way. You want to just have a seat and enjoy. Coming up at 3 o'clock, we got Logan Gilbert, who will join us. Really, really fun conversation with him. Our buddy Adam Ray is in town out here in Arizona, and he's going to join us on set at 3:30. And then we'll speak with the president of baseball operations, Jerry DePoto, at 4 o'clock today. And, of course, it being Tuesday, 5 o'clock, El Hombre. Michael Bradley will join us on the program. A reminder that our coverage of Mariner spring training is presented by Alaska Airlines and Kitsap Credit Union. So a lot coming everybody's way today, Dave. And, the rain has stopped.
It's very distressing to to Mike Lefko. Our show is hanging on by a thread. And it's exposed
wet,
to the rain.
A very wet thread.
Yeah, exactly. But just saw Jerry DePoto inside. He was packing up a box or something.
And yeah.
He's like, boy, you guys are really grinding it out there, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. We're grinders, by God.
Man.
We're grinders. So we'll get through it. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we got a lot to discuss. Meanwhile, the big news out of the Seahawks is Al Woods, a guy that you and I, Dave, I feel like we've been sort of the presidents of his fan club. Especially last season, when the defense was pretty disappointing across the board, with a couple of exceptions, and he was one of the exceptions. We really liked the way he played. The defensive line was a problem, but he was kind of the consistent force up there, the guy that seemed to be doing the right things at the right times. And the Seahawks cut Al Woods. They save $3.67 million in cap space. They were in pretty decent cap position as far as we could tell. You know, we're looking at Spotrac, which even our guy from there has talked about not completely up to date on every last number, but it's kind of a surprising move because they didn't appear or they weren't talked about as a team that was needing cap space. So what's your reaction to that move?
Yeah, it's one of those moves that you go afterwards, we'll talk to John Schneider and maybe it'll make sense. You know, the other thing is, I think you're referencing Michael Ginetti from Spotrac, and he is a little bit more like, you know, less likely to believe everything than people who actually read his website.
Right.
People are going, oh, yeah, they have this.
And, well, it becomes gospel.
Yeah, and then you have Ginetti come on, who actually is writing all that. I mean, he's in charge of the entire website, and he's like, well, this is my best estimate. So, yeah, we'll see. How many sacks you think Al Woods had in his 12-year career?
That's a good question. Not a great one.
It's a great
good one.
Question.
That's good. It's good. Put the pen down, Matt. Boy, I'm not going to say a ton. Just because he's playing in the middle, he takes up space. He's great at stopping the run. I'll say 13.
Yeah, it's 9.
Wow,
9 sacks. Look, that wasn't his. I mean, his season high in 2 years, he got 2, and yeah, I was just kind of surprised to see that because he just is. He's productive. He really is. But I mean, look, a couple of things. Number one. Yeah, I loved the way he played last year. There's not very many guys that can, in the NFL, take on a block, maintain that block, and then, you know, or at least stalemate it, mm-hmm. and then reach with the other hand and make a tackle. And that was Al Woods. He's just a big, strong dude. We talked about how big his hands are. And I was thinking,
like catcher's mitts.
He should really go into that league, that slap fight league, where they slap each other.
I was showing Dave some highlights of that last night.
Oh, my.
Power slap.
He would just knock everybody out with his hands weigh like 35 pounds each.
Yeah, he might hurt somebody.
By the way, why is that the only channel we get in the house? Is that Shannon programmed that?
That's a weird system we've got in the house there that we get.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure Shannon's up late at night watching slap fighting.
The power slap league.
Yeah. he's one of those guys that, I mean, he's 33 years old, is that right? No, he's 35, actually. He's about to turn 36 here in 4 days. So, yeah, I mean, and he did take a year off, the pandemic year, but I would think that would be it for Al. A little bit surprising, but, you know, they've gotten a couple of D linemen. I used to tease the D linemen that I played with. They didn't like hearing this, but I'd be like, look, your assignment, you either go straight, left, or right. Okay, that's so my point is that I think if you get a young guy and you can bring him in to play that nose position, you know, they've got some big guys already that they can line up inside. Jaron Reed's pretty good at holding his own on the inside. So, you know, that's
it's just a big free agent signing they made, and so yeah. But that's two guys we're looking at, and I think they still have Brian Monet.
Yeah, Monet's a good player. Yeah, but I mean, look, I think you don't need anybody. It's nice. It's a bonus if you have a dynamic player at that position. But if it's just a guy like Al Woods who's responsible, holds his water on the inside, doesn't get blown back into linebackers, you know, that's really your job there. And it's not overly complicated, and it's not like, you know, playing wide receiver, going, you know, coming from college into the NFL. I mean, I'm sure quarterback is ridiculously hard. Mm-hmm. I think receiver is hard just because of the routes. Corner, you know, which was so amazing about Tariq Woolen. But, you know, when you look at the guy that's going to be an interior defensive lineman, you know, even, you know, you look on the other side, center, guard, I mean, there's lots of plays to remember, but it really is for those guys. It's like, get lined up in the right gap, okay, and then either go straight, left, or to the right. You know, it's not like a really difficult position to fill.
Well, my first question to you last night, we saw this last night, does that tip their hand maybe as to what they may be doing with that number five pick? Now, we don't know if they're going to pick at five, they're going to trade back, who they have graded out. They may have a bunch of guys that they love equally, you know, there and feel like they could trade back and accumulate more picks and still get a difference maker to occupy that spot, obviously a younger player who's cheaper. So do you draw any connection to that? Like, all right, they may have identified a couple of guys that are going to play on that line that they wouldn't mind playing that spot on the line?
No, I don't think so, just because, I mean, you really can't plan based on, you know, certainly not the draft.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe free agency is one thing. But, you know, I know that Scott Fitterer, what was the thing that we made a comment, or Schneider made a comment where he's like, I've known you for like forever, and I didn't know you were gonna do that move that they made with the Bears. So yeah, nobody truly knows what anyone else is gonna do. So I don't think it would be, certainly not based on anything that you would you'd see them do in the draft.
Yeah, and listen, not to present Al Woods as all world and oh my God, what are they gonna do without him? But on a defense that was not very good, that didn't have many guys that stood out in a positive way, he was one of them. And he was a guy that we talked a lot about. And yeah, what he did is not glamorous. It doesn't show up on the stat sheet. It's not, you know, quarterback pressures or sacks. He's just that guy when you really focus in on him and you see how much attention he takes up and what he's able to do even when half of his body is occupied by another player. Yeah. And his ability to stop a guy who's 200-plus pounds running at full speed through the hole with one arm is just a ridiculous level of strength. It is really, really impressive. So,
and he's just reliable.
Yeah,
too,
it's just kind of more of a surprise move. Not earth-shattering, but on a defense that didn't have a lot to cling to. He was one of those elements. So
36, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. And you get beat up inside. And, you know, I think he had a couple of games that, you know, he missed three games last year. He played in three. Didn't start in three of the games. And, you know, he started every other game. So, yeah, you get beat up inside. And, you know, I appreciate those guys so much, having played inside linebacker and knowing that those guys are everything. I mean, if they don't do a good job, if they shirk their responsibility, you got a guard in your lap, and it's just annoying. And he is just one of those really solid guys. But I imagine Al go back on his farm, getting up at 4 in the morning, doing the treadmill, probably drop about 100 pounds.
Throwing around bales of hay like they're you know, little Frisbees out there. He's just going
to... Remember, we talked to him, he's got ownership, and well, he did like some sandwich shops or something like that. I can't remember. It was some chain that he bought a couple of franchises. So, yeah, he's good to go, but what a solid dude. And he was actually here in 2011. I don't really remember him when he was in Seattle. That was the second year
that
John and Pete were here. But then he went to Pittsburgh, Tennessee, Indiana, Indianapolis, so, and then back to Seattle for 3 years, again, skipping 2020 because of the pandemic. But what a good dude. What a great, reliable player. But, you know, I wonder if he also was like, yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, maybe we hear, you know, maybe we hear something down the road here shortly about a retirement. We'll see. But an interesting move by the Seahawks. So then you start flashing forward, looking toward the draft, and we've been, you know, looking at the mock drafts again. Take them as seriously as you'd like. You're seeing a name that's attached to the Seahawks more and more often now, and that's Jalen Carter, and he's become very polarizing. At what point he was consensus, Dave? He was thought to be maybe number one overall when the Bears had that pick. It was a no-brainer. We had the guy on from Georgia who couldn't have been more effusive in his praise of him, wouldn't even let us get the question out. Are there any weaknesses? None. No. It just basically he should be in the Hall of Fame before he takes a snap. I mean, that level of praise.
Yeah.
And now the incident happened. That became public. The combine, his workout didn't go. I mean, it's been a complete 180 from how he was viewed. And we're seeing his name attached. It doesn't mean the Seahawks have that interest. But K.J. Wright, who obviously talked about, you know, has been on the station, and he was asked about what he hopes the Seahawks do in the draft and what, more importantly, they don't do.
I hope that they don't draft Jalen Carter. I mean, I know everyone loves him, you know, big guy, but the man terrifies me.
Why?
I've never seen a guy to literally throw away millions of dollars like this young man has. Just coming to your pro day, overweight, out of shape, can't finish. Who does that? And so, nope, he's not at number five, maybe with that number 17 or 18 pick that they have, but that high, I don't trust.
I like his use of
terrifying,
because when he talked about the interior of both the O-line and the D-line, he's like, that side terrifies me. This side horrifies me. So, yeah, he's terrified of what he didn't see from Jalen Carter in his pro day.
Yeah, a little conversation with KJ, and of course, I totally respect his opinion. I mean, I feel like he's always pretty much spot on, and he's right. I mean, look at, I'm sure KJ, thinking back when he got drafted, like, this is an unbelievable opportunity. I mean, look at the path that KJ's life has gone on. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not sure I think he met his wife up in Seattle, and, you know, his whole family and everything is all because, you know, he was a really good football player, worked his tail off and did everything he could to get into the NFL. And he sees a guy like Jalen Carter that has a ton of talent that has just kind of thrown it away. But yeah, I took a look at him, and, you know, there's a few things that, you know, that are concerning. And, you know, not only what we heard about some of the patterns of his behavior, but I'm not sure, Bob, if he was ever in shape for even the season. Because there's a couple of different websites I looked at. One had 20, the other was 30. It was a number of snaps that he took each game. It was like 20 snaps was the average, according to a couple of the websites. And according to kind of what I saw, a couple of games that I looked at, the first one of the year, that was the game where they just killed Oregon. Mm-hmm. Remember, they just blew him out. He was missing a lot. And so, you know, and the other thing is, and, you know, KJ kind of brought this up. There's lots of yogging, Bob. Okay, for those of you who are good listeners, you know what that means. I mean, it's just he's not hustling. He's not hustling at all. And, you know, if he makes his move, he is unbelievable. Like, if he can beat a double team, and he's got this great swim move, and it's like he fires his shot, and then if it doesn't work, he kind of shuts it down. So, but I mean, when it does work, it's just phenomenal.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things I learned about, you talked about the play-by-play guy, and with Georgia, just the hype and everything of SEC football. Yeah. And, you know, in the South, it's like, you know, I punched something into the internet this morning, and everything came back like, you know, just how he's the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody's just pumping him up and this and that. But, you know, the scouts aren't looking at that stuff, man. I mean, I think it's just all the hysteria that goes along with SEC football and just, you know, that part of the country. That's like a pro team for them. I mean, everybody, you know, there's 25 guys sitting in their underwear in their mom's basement that are like putting together these videos about how great Georgia football is. And but if you go and look at it, the lack of snaps, it looked like, you know, that would be the only thing. I mean, if he's only getting 20 to 30 snaps a game, mm-hmm. he's not in very good shape. And especially that first game. I mean, that's the one, the first game of the year is always, you can't prepare for that. You can be in great cardio shape and everything, but it's going to get you sore, and it's like nothing that you can ever simulate going into the season. And that Oregon game, yeah, there was lots of times where I'm like, why isn't he on the field? And then, like, you know, Lofa, or I'm sorry, I said that because KJ used the word loaf. You know, he said he kind of loafs a little bit, and yeah, he takes some plays off. So that's something that you double that with the off the field stuff and the immaturity, and you start to go,
Yeah, and KJ went on to kind of compare him to somebody who's become a cautionary tale for the Seahawks and maybe taking a chance on somebody who is perceived as a character risk, and that was Malik McDowell.
I mean, when you have the red flags, I believe you should listen to them. You should see what a guy tells you. You know, guys tell you who they are. And do guys make mistakes? Absolutely. But when it's consistently like this happens and this happens and this happens, you should listen to it. And so when that did happen to Malik, we were all just devastated for him. It was a four-wheeler accident, right? No one wears helmets down in the country. But it's just something that unfortunately happened. And so when guys, you know, when Tony Dungy, I look at Tony Dungy, when he looks at some guys, he just scratches them off of his draft board. Like, if a guy's making these poor decisions year in, year out, I got to listen to him, especially if I'm investing millions of dollars into him. So when it comes to Jalen Carter, I knew going into that pro day, I'm like, I'm very interested to see how he shows up, how he performs, and then he's not able to finish. And so, no, I'm not going to take you as a number five pick. You're going to wait, and if down the line you're there, then I'll take a chance on you.
Well, the other thing, too, is, and I'm totally with KJ on that. It's interesting what he said about Tony Dungy. I'm not sure what insight he has with Tony Dungy. Totally respect that guy. It's just amazing. But, yeah, I mean, we talk about how they're going to go to the equipment guys, and they're going to go to the trainers, and they're going to go to everybody that, you know, whoever is around the program and try to figure it out. And I feel like the program is kind of on to that, you know, and so maybe you're not getting the best information about, you know, what he's like afterwards. And maybe that's why we didn't find out about it. I mentioned earlier all the hype and the SEC and Georgia program, you know, back-to-back national championships. Everything is all love and great. Everything is, you know, greatest thing since sliced bread, like I said. So maybe that, you know, you have to dig a little deeper to get some stuff on these guys, because, you know, you would have thought if somebody called Rabel, you know, he'd probably be like, yeah, he's a great player, man, unbelievable, but, you know, he'd take some plays off, and we just didn't hear that really from anybody that we've talked to.
Well, and when you look at somebody like him, it's possible for it to go obviously a few different ways, but we've seen examples of it going to two different extremes. We saw obviously what happened with Malik McDowell. We saw what happened with Isaiah Wilson, who was a draft pick of Left Coast Titans, who turned into a disaster, last seen dancing on top of a car with no shirt on. what did we say? He had three total snaps in the NFL?
Yeah, no offensive snaps either.
Yeah, special team snaps.
And he was supposed to be a franchise left tackle.
Yeah, but you can go the other way. We talked about this. Laremy Tunsil, the guy who right there in the draft, all of a sudden, breaking news. Here's a picture of him with the gas mask bong, and everybody going, what is going on with this guy? And then he drops in the draft. He slips to 13, and that's in the 2016 draft. Now you look at him. He just signed a record for a left tackle, 3 years, $75 million deal with the Texans, $50 million guaranteed, a total of 60 guaranteed. So, you know, that's one guy who went a completely different direction when you looked at him and said, whoa, I'm not touching that. That's a huge red flag. So
how far did he slip? Do you remember?
13.
He went down 13 spots?
No, to number 13.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, he was thought to be top, depending on mocks. Again,
yeah, right.
He was
right.
Top five in some mocks. He was certainly top 10.
Yeah.
He dropped to 13, and now he's looked at as a premier player in this league and being paid as such.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting. Another thought that I had about you know, maybe that program with Georgia, and going back, you know, 20 years, a little bit less than that, I have a good friend who's a scout. He was a scout, and at the time Texas was one of those schools that kind of pampered their, you know, that's where Tubbs came from.
Marcus Tubbs
back, who's an interior D lineman, and didn't work out with him. And the scout that I talked to, he felt like their program just kind of spoils kids, and, you know, they just cater to everything. They're not great. They're not hungry coming out of that university. Maybe, you know, Georgia is a little bit that way, but yeah, it's pretty interesting. It's one thing to look at his highlight film, and it's another to watch games and see a lot of times where he's either not going 100 or he's not on the field.
All right, let's take two.
Well, the Cardinals announced about an hour ago that they've signed L.J. Collier to a one-year deal. A couple of other signings. Running back Ronald Jones has agreed to a one-year deal with the Cowboys, and former Bills wide receiver Isaiah McKenzie has signed with the Colts.
Interesting to see L.J. Collier moving on, but he's still in the division, and we'll see what kind of impact he has with the Cardinals. You and I talked off the air about this when we saw the move, Dave, and this is one where you always speculate with any player that leaves any Seattle, the baseball, Mariners, Seahawks, what have you. Oh, watch him go there and just completely crush it. If he does that, I'm not going to feel bad about, well, Seahawks didn't get the best out of him. He got every possible opportunity here. They kept him on the roster. They gave him opportunities. It just didn't happen for whatever reason. I don't know if he didn't fit the defense. I don't know if it was his effort or his skill set didn't apply to what they wanted him to do. I don't know. So if he goes there and has a great year, I'm not going to be mad at the Seahawks.
Yeah, well, and I don't think that that is going to happen very often in Seattle, because this is a good, it's a well-run organization. You know, the coaching is good. You know, we talk about Pete Carroll, what a great coach he is. John Schneider, how good they are to the players, everything. I think that happens a lot of times when somebody's in a bad situation. The coaching is not good. They're not playing him to the best of his potential. But nice kid. I really liked LJ. He had actually a pretty decent year in 2020. He had three sacks that year. Remember against the Patriots? Yeah, with Cam Newton, where he had the big stop down on the goal line. But yeah, best to him. But yeah, I don't, you know, the whole notion that he's going to go to Arizona and just flourish, yeah, I'm not buying that.
Well, the Seahawks don't really have a number three receiver behind DK and Tyler Lockett because Marquise Goodwin's a free agent, and he was in Cleveland yesterday and today. Justina Anderson reports that Goodwin visited the Browns yesterday and is finishing up his visit today.
I think he's one of those guys I had when we did our thing about must-have, you know, don't care, or goodbye, when we, you know, kind of ranked the free agents.
We cared. We didn't say don't care.
I liked Goodwin, man. I liked Marquise Goodwin. That game against the Chargers, there's a lot that happened in that game that was really good offensively, including Ken Walker. But, you know, I thought he had a great game. I think he had a couple of touchdowns in that game. And just is incredibly athletic. And, you know, you saw him do the backflip. I mean, that guy, we liked him.
Yeah.
Good guy. So
funny interview.
This is this is one where I'm like, okay, if he goes to the Browns and balls out, I'm not going to be happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what their conversations have been with him behind the scenes, if they've made any offers or expressed interest in bringing him back or what have you, but you don't have an obvious third receiver right now. You have receivers on the roster maybe they have belief in that we're not talking about, but I think Penny Hart is a free agent that they left untendered, so he's out there to be had. I don't know, maybe they're planning on drafting a receiver that they feel is going to be a guy that occupies that spot. Again, you get younger, you get cheaper in the draft, so maybe they're looking at it that way. But, yeah, they're outside of a tight end, who was Noah Fant, who was their third leading receiver, they don't have an obvious name sitting there right now. So we'll see what happens with Marquise. Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/CyberKnifeProstate. Coming up, the WBC has continued to deliver the drama. We're going to get into that next as we continue live from Peoria, Arizona, site of the Mariners Spring Training Camp. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
We continue live from Peoria, Arizona, Mariners Training Complex, Spring Training Complex out here. Our coverage of Mariners Spring Training is presented by Alaska Airlines and Kitsap Credit Union. We were out there eating dinner last night at a restaurant, big TV up there, watching the World Baseball Classic, Japan versus Mexico. What a great game that was.
It was really fun, wasn't it?
That was compelling.
I mean, Mexico goes up early.
3-0. Yeah, we got there by the time we were done with the show. We went over there, and it was 3-0 Mexico. I think it was the sixth or seventh inning.
Well, we got there in like the fifth or sixth, and then all of a sudden, just an explosion from Japan. They end up getting six runs in the last three innings. But that was really fun to watch.
And they traded leads and went back. You know, Japan comes back. Then Mexico comes back, retakes the lead. You got Verdugo out there showing everybody how cool he is and everything, and very excited. And then Japan comes back. Otani comes up, laces a double to the gap, and I was telling you last night, and then Shannon was saying it today, I've never seen him animated like that. He's standing on second base, and he's like let's go, you know, waving his arms and yelling. I've never seen Ohtani do that. And it just speaks to how much this means to these guys. And the building is going bananas. It was, and you saw how it ended, and it was just, it was amazing.
Well, and you had some numbers on, like, the most watched baseball. That was really surprising to me. But, I mean, look, you're bringing in really the whole world, right?
Yeah.
This is world bragging rights on the line tonight.
Yeah, so I tweeted this out. If you're on Twitter, at Bob Stelton, I retweeted it. Japan versus the Oryx Buffaloes was watched by 36 million people in Japan. And then Japan versus Korea, 55-plus million. Japan versus Italy, 62.5 million. The most watched World Series game, 54.5 million back in 1980. Hmm. So they're saying, and they said, good chance USA versus Japan is the most watched baseball game of all time.
Wow.
Of all time, the history of the sport that is well over a century old, and U.S. versus Japan coming up at 4 o'clock today.
Well, and you're going to have two, like, generational players in Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani who are on the same team going at it.
Yeah.
I can't wait to watch that game tonight. And, yeah, well, hopefully. I wish it was, you know, on at, like, 7 o'clock Pacific time.
Yeah, but so we could be done.
It's 4 o'clock PST, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, the idea that that game could be the most, you know, again, the most watched game in the history of the sport.
I got to say, you know, JP called it, man. He was all fired up about this. And I was like, look, the last one was in 2017. I don't remember us being that invested in the classic. And, you know, that was, I don't know, it just wasn't talked about that much. I don't even know if we did any segments or anything on it radio wise. This has been really cool. And, you know, a lot of it because Julio and Teoscar Hernandez and, you know, Brash and, you know, Harry Ford, and Sir Harry.
Yeah, Sir Harry Ford.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's in spite of the fact that there was a couple of injuries, I just think the players love this so much. And like you said, I mean, I never saw Ohtani get that fired up when he's playing for the Angels, ever.
Maybe there's just not much to get fired up about.
Well,
not playing for the Angels. I don't know.
That's true. That's true. But
it's cool to watch that reaction, not just from the players, but from the fans. I mean, we saw. Remember, at one point, Japan was down, and the camera zeroed in on that one fan. He was a Japanese fan, and he looked like he was shedding tears.
He was crying. Yeah,
like he was at a source over the fact that they may lose this game. So, you know, it just, to say it means a lot to these people is an understatement. The people in the stands, I'm talking about the fans, it means a ton. And they just, they wear their fandom with pride. Everybody's got the gear on, and they're just going ballistic when things go well for their team. And as we saw, when things aren't going well, this guy is basically shedding tears. Game wasn't even over. You know, and Japan comes back. They tie it up with that home run, the tie thing. It was just, it was very, very compelling baseball. And, you know, for a sport that is often referred to, oh, it's an old person sport. Only old people watch this. Nobody cares. It's simply not true. Maybe in certain markets it doesn't draw well, or it doesn't have the impact that football does. But, you know, I played you that clip of the TV show I was watching. Bomani Jones has a show on HBO, and he was doing a bit on baseball, and he was playing different clips from different people citing numbers about, well, here the NFL last year, they made, I can't remember, there, $12 billion in profit. The NBA made $8 billion in profit. Well, ahead of the NBA and just behind the NFL was Major League Baseball with 10 point something. I'm just throwing out loose numbers, but it was behind the NFL, but ahead of the NBA. Mm. And, it, you know, these are TV deals and all of this that are going on. And on some level, it almost doesn't matter about attendance in certain aspects. But it speaks to the overall popularity of the sport, that there are companies willing to invest. And you know, I know what's going on with Valleys right now and everything with the regional sports networks that they're in control of or were in control of. But this is the sport is healthy. It's a healthy sport, and it's a popular sport, and you're seeing it. You know, you're talking about these kind of numbers. This kind of viewership is off the charts.
Oh, maybe I'll have to ask Alambre, because, you know, I remember we asked him about the health of the game, and he was kind of like, well, it's regional, and, you know, kind of downplaying it a little bit. I didn't think that there would be that much pride in playing for your country. You know,
in
this WBC,
yeah,
that's the thing that really showed up. I thought that was interesting. You know, these guys, they loved it. They loved, I mean, look at, like, you know, you look at Julio, who, you know, he didn't, he's playing for the Mariners, but he was going to go. He was going to go and play no matter what.
Yeah. And same with Matt Brash. Remember, Matt Brash basically decided to forego competing for a rotation spot to go play for Team Canada, because when we interviewed Jerry, that was sort of the condition, like, hey, if you want to compete for a spot in this rotation, it's not going to work if you do this. So if you go, you're sort of relegating yourself to the bullpen. And he said, I'm going.
Yeah. How do you feel about Matt Brash? I mean, based on all of what we've seen and the pride that all these players have playing for their home country, I don't know. I guess I give him a little bit more of a break. But the way you put it, like, you got a chance to be in a starting rotation for a Major League Baseball team, and this is your employer. And, I mean, I –
speaks to how much it means to him.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know how fans would feel about that, and you know, maybe everybody's mixed on that. But it's, when you put it that way, it's kind of like, really, huh? What do you think you would do?
I feel like I'd play for my team, my employer.
Yeah,
but I don't know. Maybe if I'm, you know, in my early 20s, you know, 10 years ago, and I get that opportunity, maybe I have a different feeling about it. But if you're an Angels fan, who are you pulling for? You got Mike Trout, Team USA. You got Shohei Ohtani, Team Japan.
Well, I feel like worldwide, Ohtani is gonna take it. But in the U.S., maybe it's a little bit more leaning towards Trout. That's gonna be cool. Those two going after it.
It'd be great if they faced each other. I know Ohtani has said, you know, he may pitch in relief, I think is the word. He's not going to start. But the idea of those two coming up against each other, maybe the game's on the line. Ohtani's out there in relief, and here comes Trout, and it's a tie game or a one-run game or something. That'd be amazing.
Would you root against Team USA if it meant rooting against Mike Trout?
I don't hate Mike Trout. Well, I think I'm more
exacerbated
amazed.
Things last year with that brawl.
Yeah, he did. I still don't. I was more disappointed. I don't sports hate Mike Trout, even though he crushes the Mariners. But
I don't like him anymore.
I'm fascinated by Shohei Ohtani.
I still love him.
I am absolutely fascinated by Ohtani. I was telling Lefko this the other night, that I just still feel like there are certain aspects of the baseball community that don't quite appreciate what they're watching with this guy, because we've never seen it in our lifetime, a guy that's doing what he's doing at the level that he's doing.
He got two hits last night.
Yeah.
Didn't he get one in the ninth inning?
He came up with a double.
It was a double.
The gap.
What if he's not pitching tonight, right?
No.
Okay.
Well, maybe in relief.
What if he comes in and beans Mike Trout and breaks his hand?
Ooh.
Are you going to be?
It's going to be an uncomfortable clubhouse out there in Anaheim.
I mean, if you're a true Mariner fan, that's kind of what you're rooting for.
Yeah, I won't root for injury, but what if he plunks him in the backside or something? You know, I don't know. It would be very entertaining to watch from the outside.
I'm going to go ahead and root for injury, Bob.
Wow, you're a bad person. All right. I'm kidding. All right, coming up, there are more issues popping up between the NFL and the NFLPA. We'll take a look at those next as we continue live from Peoria, Arizona. This is Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Continue live from Peoria, Arizona, Mariners Spring Training Complex. It is Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports Station on 710. Make sure you stay tuned. Coming up, we've got a lot coming your way. Our conversation with Logan Gilbert, Adam Ray, Jerry DePoto, El Hombre, Michael Bradley. So there is a lot coming your way. But, Dave, you and I talked about this story a bit. And the Lamar Jackson, still not signed, the franchise tag, but still not the extension. And the accusations, just sort of people out there saying, oh, they're colluding. League's colluding against him. They don't somehow want to hold this man down. I'm not sure why him, and they'll sign Deshaun Watson to some ridiculous contract. But for some reason, people believe that the league has conspired. GMs have gotten together to say, you can't give this guy guaranteed money. You just can't do it. It's going to set a poor precedent, and then everybody's going to expect that our guy gets this, what have you. And there's this thing that was written by DeMore Smith, who heads up the NFLPA. He said the NFL draft and the franchise tag system exist because owners have colluded in the past to depress and restrict markets. This time they are criminally gaming the game itself. is what he said. He said, we are all staring at the same answer to the obvious questions. Why did Kirk Cousins, Deshaun Watson get fully guaranteed contracts while others didn't? Or to be more specific, why have the Baltimore Ravens and other teams publicly made such a point to say they're not going to compensate Lamar Jackson with a fully guaranteed contract like Cousins or Watson? Let's be clear, my nearly 15-year career as executive director, I've never witnessed teams being so quick to publicly announce their lack of interest and an MVP quarterback who's in his prime, who's also going to get an injury guarantee regardless of his contract. And he went on and on. But basically he's saying there's some sort of conspiracy. Mm-hmm. There's a C-O-N-spiracy going on.
C-O-N-spiracy. Yes.
I'm rarely on the side of owners when it comes to these kind of things. I typically fall on the side of the players in most instances. But this one, it feels obvious to me. It feels like I don't get the debate. I understand that Lamar, he tweets out. He turned down a 3-year, $133 million fully guaranteed contract. He wants something along the lines or maybe exceeding what Deshaun Watson got. And for a guy who has missed time, who plays the way that he does, whose numbers have gone down the past 2 years, to expect that number, I just don't think that's a reasonable expectation from a GM. If I'm a GM, I'm leery. I'm paranoid. I'm worried about that. If I give him a 5-year, 200 and whatever million-dollar deal, that's the kind of player who does get hurt. The way he plays opens himself up to injury more than the way somebody like, you know, Tom Brady plays, who sits in the pocket and doesn't take that kind of risk. So yeah. I just don't quite get this whole sort of groundswell of there's something nefarious going on behind the scenes. I don't see it that way.
Well, it's kind of interesting because we heard this about the combine as well from the NFLPA. And, you know, my history with the NFLPA goes back to the year that we went on strike. I feel like that they've not been represented by the best and the brightest. That we went on strike and we didn't need to. And I told that story the other day that Marvin Demoff, my agent, I was a rookie, he called the whole thing. He's like, you're going to get free agency. It's going to be one in court at the end of the season. There's no reason to go on strike. And so, you know, and my experience was there was always two or three guys on the team that were heavy union guys, nothing against labor unions or anything. I'm just talking about the NFLPA, the union with the NFL, that they were just a little bit off and they were always, you know, looking to fight somebody over something. And
who was running it then? Was it Upshaw?
Yeah, it was Gene Upshaw at that point. And I just thought he did a lot of things that were really just not good ideas and not good business. And I just think the NFLPA has kind of been quiet. And there'll be people that are listening and some of my teammates that hate this about me, but I feel like they've always been just off. You know, the NFL is a good business. They're running it the right way. Trying to find some kind of conspiracy with, you know, Lamar Jackson, who you're right. I mean, he's a guy that you would guarantee him a contract and he gets hurt. The style of the way that he plays. Remember we talked to Pete about that, and he's like, some guys just, they have that tendency, and they just run the heck out of him, and he's fantastic.
It is part of what makes him great, but at some point,
yeah.
But it's, you know, a huge risk.
The NFLPA had the whole thing about the they thought the combine was crappy, and the combine is at an all-time high as far as popularity goes. They're disparaging the draft system. You know, I mean, the NFL draft is now on TV primetime and
moving from cities city are to begging city. For it to show up in their city.
Yeah, so it's just, I feel like they're just sort of barking at the wind, really. I mean, there's not really anything there, and they're trying to remain relevant. And I've always said I feel like I get a lot of help. Like Mac Strong works for the NFL. Mm-hmm. And Mac, you know, he sent me an app the other day because I was like, hey, I know that there's a lot of things I'm not taking advantage of. I mean, there are certain, like, discounts and, you know, things you can get. Like, you can get a highlight film made from NFL Films. The NFL takes care of their players. There's not some big labor crisis that's going on that, you know, the players are being manipulated or they're getting ripped off. I don't think that really exists.
Yeah.
And so the NFLPA just in general, in my experience, has been just a little bit off, a little bit behind the NFL. They try to make some noise and, you know, sort of justify their existence. But and I'm glad there is a union. There needs to be someone to check the owners. There's no question
about
that.
Well, they do
that.
A lot of great things.
Yeah.
This one in particular, and the combine, which they want to make regional, and I didn't quite understand the motivation for that. But this, it just doesn't seem reasonable, a reasonable point of view. Just,
yeah.
I don't get why they look at it as such an outlier of how this is clearly something below board that's happening here, because the guy's just too good for teams not to be interested. Well, I think all teams would be interested, but just not at 200 and whatever million guaranteed. That's a different. There's being interested, and yeah, I'll give up draft picks, and of course I want this guy on my team. Nobody's saying that. It's, we can't guarantee a guy that plays like that, who has been dinged up, missed 10 games in the past 2 years.
Yeah.
The interception to touchdown ratio is closed in the past 2 years. Yeah, man, well, it feels an obvious thing.
Well, the other thing, too, is I just think that if there is some kind of financial corruption, you know, that would be bad for the NFL, too. I mean, and for you to guarantee a guy like that, that's not good for the financial health of the NFL. And so, you know, because you'd be paying him out for years for he's not producing anything on the field. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get as much production as we possibly can. I feel like this is one case where, and maybe the NFL will take a turn for the worse and, you know, start to have some things, screw some things up. But right now, the NFL is hot. And I feel like the NFLPA is trying to still remain relevant. You know, remember there was not only the combine, but there was also the complaining about the DeMar Hamlin thing that they, you know, didn't reschedule the game quicker. They decided to reschedule or not.
They didn't call it quick.
Call the game after an hour and 6 minutes. That was way too long. You know, they're trying to remain relevant for whatever reason. I don't know. But things are going well right now in the NFL. And I'm glad we have a union just for the checks and balances, but right now I just feel like they're off.
All right, coming up, we got a lot of great guests coming up today, and we kick things off with Mariners pitcher Logan Gilbert. He'll join us next here with Wyman and Bob live from Peoria, Arizona. Site of Mariners spring training is happening right now. This is Seattle Sports on 710.